Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on redemption and the straw man right after this. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. We've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court is a fool for a client, but what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, "He who fixes his own pipes is a fool for a client"? Or what if a carpenter said, "He who fixes his own steps is a fool for a client"? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law school professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said about lawyers. He said it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, and do so without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he says it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about the Courtroom Strategy and Procedure School here, why don't you call 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, Courtroom Strategy and Procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Hey, the other day I was on a mission. I wasn't out saving people, but I was on a chore, and I had a guy with me from Australia. Hell of a nice guy. And we were chit-chatting a little bit, and he was telling me about birth certificates down in Australia. And I'm always interested in what's going on around the world and what other people are doing, and he's a pretty knowledgeable fellow in law. And as we were talking, he talked about this thing of redemption. And I'd heard that word redemption and straw man and one thing and another. Down in Australia, they use some little different terms, you know, like, you know, they when they're talking about car talk, you know. Here in the United States, the engine of your car is under the hood. Well, down in Australia, it's under the bonnet. Or maybe that's in Canada, they raise the bonnet to check the oil, and they put their suitcase in the boot. You know, he talks about the boot all the time, and And so here in the United States, we call this a rescission of contract. I mean, if you walked over here to Bouvier's Law Dictionary and you wanted to know, what do I do if I want to rescind my driver's license? If the state wants to terminate their relationship with you concerning your driver's license, they revoke it. It's called a revocation. They're going to revoke your driver's license. Well, what would happen if you wanted to revoke the driver's license? It's not called a revocation. It's called a rescission. You're dissatisfied with Social Security? Well, Social Security might terminate you, terminate your account, or terminate your payments. But you would rescind your Social Security account. So these are just legal terms. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is because when I make that statement, you can go over to Bouvier or Black's Law Dictionary. You can go to the U.S. Supreme Court reports. You can go to the American jurisprudence. You can go to the sources. Now, what we call this is the literature. You go to the literature. So when I go into court and I want to talk to the judge does not want to know what George Gordon's opinion is. He doesn't care about what I think. I can write an amicus curiae, or I can write a brief, and then I can tell him, here's what I think. And that's the proper forum for doing that, or the format. But on issues of law, or issues of definitions of words, or the use of language, the judge does not really care much about George Gordon's opinion. In fact, he doesn't even care about some fellow judge's opinion or, you know, some other lawyer's opinion. What he's looking at is the literature. He wants to know what the state of the law is concerning this subject at this moment in time. As one judge said to me, he said, that is not the state of the law in Idaho at this time. Now, law is always in flux. Law is being changed all the time. That is man's law. The laws of the United States or Germany or France or China, they're in flux all the time. It depends upon how the legislature is sitting and what they're doing this week. The law of God never changes. In fact, he has a law that says, I change not. It's what we call the doctrine of stare decisis. Once settled, always settled. As opposed to res judicata, which says, well, that's the law of this case. But the law of the next case may be something different than that. So you have the res judicata, the law of the case, and you have stare decisis, or stare, I guess they call it stare decisis. Now, when it comes to this thing, have you heard these terms like, listen to this, accepted for value? You ever heard that term? Or redemption? Or straw man? How about UCC 1-207? Redemption? Redemption process? And there's probably 10 other terms that go along with this, but I think that'll give you the flavor of it. Now, if you take accepted for value, that's a UCC term, and it's actually a legitimate term, and you can go to the Uniform Commercial Code and you can look up accepted for value, redemption, straw man. Those are real terms. You can actually go over to the dictionary and look them up. But there's something going on here that really blows me away, and what it is it's the use of these words and terms out of context and off point. In other words, they're using real legal terms that really have meaning, but they're using them in a way that's totally ridiculous, off point, out of context, and has no legal efficacy. And people are just buying this up by the droves and scores. I think, I don't know this positively, but I think about every day. Now, my phone rings about 30 times a day here. And every day, I think there's at least one call that comes in here that deals with accepted for value, redemption, straw man, UCC 1-207, redemption, redemption process, or something along those lines. And a lot of times people, very sincere, I'm sure, they come in here and they want to tell me about this, or they want to announce this, they want to inform me, they want to clue me in because they think I'm totally clueless, never heard of this before, and that I need to be informed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm not discouraging you, and I wouldn't tell you not to call me and not to tell me about it, but I just wanted to let you know that I have heard this before. In fact, I put out a CD not too, well, I say it not too long ago, probably 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago now, I don't know. You get old, you know time passes when you're having fun. Let me tell you where I first heard this. I was in Fresno, California. I don't know if it was 10 years ago, maybe a little longer. And a lady came up to me in a school. I was teaching tax school. And this lady came up to me, and she had a black binder and about a 3-incher, you know, a 2.5, 3-inch binder, and it was full of paper. And she said, well, I just finished the redemption class. And if I remember right, I think it was Jack Smith and Right Way Law that put it out. Now, I could be wrong about that. It may have been some other outfit, but it seemed to me that it was Jack Smith. And she says, what you're teaching here is the exact opposite from what this redemption process teaches. Yeah, that was her word. She said the exact opposite. And she handed me the book, and she said, now I want you to read this, and I want you to prove to me that you're right and they're wrong. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. A 2.5 or 3-inch binder, which is what I use, about a 3-inch binder, holds about 500 pages, 500 8.5 by 11-inch pages. Now, I got to confess that one time many years ago now, I went to the Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics class. Well, they were advertising a school. This is back in the 1960s. For $1,200, they said they could teach me how to read, I think it was 1,200 words a minute. Now, they tested me, and I could read 234 words a minute. And I thought, well, you know, if I read 234 words a minute, then they're going to boost me up to 1,200. See, that would be probably worth $1,200. And you know, when they got through with me, they said, "But we don't think we can help you, Mr. Gordon. We think you're too dumb. We don't think you can handle us." And you know, hell, they're probably right, because I went down when I was a kid to take a test, you know, for the post office. I was about 18, just fresh out of high school. You know, somebody said, hey, you're looking for a job? Get out of high school, get down to the post office. So I went down to the post office. I took their test. And I flunked big time. Too damn dumb. Too slow. Couldn't read the envelopes. They'd give you some envelopes and say, where are you going to deliver this? Hell, you couldn't read it. God only knows where it would go if you gave it to me. Hell, you know, God only knows where they go today when you give it to some guy. Now, I just wanted to point that out. I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer, but hell, I never claimed to be. Some people do. I never claimed that. But I don't understand accepted for value, redemption, straw man, UCC 1-207, redemption or redemption process. And I'll be damned if I'm going to read 500 pages on both sides. That's 1,000 pages of material to prove that you're wrong. Hell, I don't care if you're right or wrong. It's irrelevant to me. I'm not here to prove anything to anybody. I'm a reporter. I just report information. If you want to prove that this is right or wrong, why don't you compare the information? And then you come to a conclusion. Asking me to read this 500 or 1,000 pages of material and prove to your satisfaction that this guy's right and the other guy's wrong over here is poppycock. Hell, I'm not going to do that. Does this woman think that I'm going to spend hours and hours and hours of my time to prove to her, which is impossible anyway? I can't prove anything to you. You can prove something to yourself. I can't prove any. I can't convince you. I can't make you believe something. That's why people are Catholics, for crying out loud. You can't convince those people. That's why people are Baptists. You can't convince those people. That's why people are Mormons. You can't convince those people. Their minds are already made up. So, hell, I'm not here to tell you Mormons and Catholics and Protestants over here what you ought to believe. Go figure it out for yourself. Now, what I do have a job doing, and it pays pretty well, and I'm happy with it, and I have a good time doing it, is presenting information. Now, if you wanted to know about Accepted for Value, Redemption, Straw Men, and UCC 1-207, Redemption and Redemption Process, and I guess that's about all along that line that there is, then why don't you go to the literature? And that's what I did. I went to American jurisprudence. I went to Corpus Juris and Corpus Juris Secundum, the U.S. Supreme Court reports, Bouvier's Law Dictionary. And when I compared what these people are telling me with what I could see in the literature, it's gobbledygook. I don't understand it, and I'll be the first one to tell you. Doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I have people come in here, and they kind of shake their head, and go, well, I thought that Gordon was smarter than that. Nope. I got to tell you, I'm just dumb as a box of rocks. Couldn't figure it out in a lifetime. And from what I can determine, the nine justices on our Supreme Court, they can't figure it out either. And they're not the only ones. There's a whole bunch of judges all over America that have been listening to this redemption straw man argument, or straw man, I don't know if it's an argument or a process, a legal position. I don't know exactly what you'd call it. And I'm not sure that these judges know what the hell to call it either. But anyway, as we were sitting here and the doctors went over to the clinic yesterday, we were talking there, and I was listening to this guy from Australia, and he was telling me about this redemption and one thing and another. And I said, well, now in the tax school, I have a section in here about chapter 9 or something like that. No, it's chapter 7, called the tax protest movement. Tax protest. So in my tax school, I have a section on tax protest. Now, I'm not a tax protester. I've been called a tax protester for 30 years. The FBI refers to George Gordon and the Gordon Law School as a tax protest group. I'm also referred to as a cult leader. Cult, C-U-L-T, leader. So I looked up the word cult to see whether or not I could qualify. And out of 7 indici for a cult, I can qualify for 3 out of the 7. So I guess that makes me a cult. But also, the Seabees and the Rangers, also, those are two elite military organizations, they qualify for 6 out of the 7. If you want to look for a cult, you look at a Seabee. And do people refer to the CBs as a cult? Well, out of 7 indici, they qualify for 6. I only qualify for 3. I'm called a cult, but they're not. Now, you go figure that out. See, I don't know. Hell, I'm just a reporter hired from the neck down here. But seems like to me the CBs would be a better candidate for cult than I would. Now, you see, here's my point. People believe whatever the hell they want to believe. And there are a lot of people out there that want to believe that I'm a tax protester. So, okay. Believe it. I don't care. I don't believe that I'm a tax protester. I don't advocate tax protest. But I teach taxes. I teach tax school. So, in the minds of some people, I must be a tax protester. Well, hell, doesn't H&R Block teach taxes? Don't they deal in taxes? Don't they write up tax returns? Has anybody ever called H&R Block a group of tax protesters? I don't know. You go figure, would you? Now, the guy from Australia sitting there in the doctor's office in the clinic over there, and he's telling me about this birth certificate and about how an account was established when he was born, which is his alter ego. And this account was sold. I don't know who bought it, and I asked him who bought it, and he didn't know. I said, how much was paid for it? He didn't know. How much is in the account? I don't know. Where is this account located? I don't know. How do you know there's an account? Well, I know there's an account because. And he talked about a guy down there that he'd learned from. And the guy that he learned from is very smart. And he just studies the law constantly. He's been studying the law for 4 years. Does he have a law school degree? No, no, of course not. Is he a lawyer? No, no. Is he a judge? No, no. Is he a college professor? No, he's none of the above. What is he? Well, I didn't ask that. I don't know if he's a carpenter, plumber, electrician or whatever the hell he is, but the guy's been studying the law. Well, hell, I've been studying the law for 25 years, and I haven't got a law school degree, and I'm not a professor, and, you know, and I don't pretend to run around knowing a hell of a lot, but I look things up. I'm not brain dead. I go to the dictionary, and I look up things, find out what the definition is, or I go over. Here's my next point. I can't find any of this in the literature. I go to the American Jurisprudence, and I'm trying to find out about my birth certificate and my alter ego and my straw man. Now, I can find straw man. A straw man is a fraudulent fellow who takes bribes. He's a guy that you bribe. See? There's another definition for straw man, which is somebody that takes your place pretends that he's you as opposed to telling people who he really is. I call that a front man, but, you know, you guess you could call him a straw man. Well, anyway, with this birth certificate over here, there's all this money out here that has something to do with government bonds. And I said, well, what is this connection with government bonds? And the man from Australia didn't know. I don't either. And I would hope that some judge, you know, certainly somebody must have taken one of these straw man redemption accepted for value cases to court at some point in time, and there must have been a judicial ruling made. Well, listen, there's a guy by the name of Larry Beecraft, and Larry Beecraft has a website. Now, this is kind of old information. This goes back to about 2000. I got this off of Larry Beecraft's website years and years and years ago. In fact, I think it was Larry that sent it to me, if I remember right. And Larry Beecraft is at fly.highway. And that's spelled HIWAAY. There's two A's in there. Highway.net. Well, anyway, he has a section in here. It's marked paragraph, or it's marked number 22, XX11. I think that's 22. And he says the straw man site drafts and posted September 18th, 1999. Hell, it's 10 years old. September 18th, 1999. And he wrote a little story in here about Roger Elvick and some other guys. And so I thought, well, let me bring this to your attention and the attention to all of you people who want to call me today, tomorrow, or next week, because you're going to call me on the phone, or you're going to write me an email, or you're going to write me a letter, and you're going to tell me about this, because I'm sure that you think that I don't know. Otherwise, why would you be telling me? And like the lady in Fresno, California, who handed me her book, who she spent a lot of money on, and she said, here, prove that you're right and prove that this guy is wrong. Now, that's what we call proving a negative. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a hell of a hard time trying to prove the positives. It's difficult to research out something and then make a presentation on it. That takes time, effort, and energy, commonly known as work. Intellectual product. And I do that, and I do it pretty well, and I like it, and it's kind of fun, and I've got a staff here, and they help me with it, and I go to Dirk, and I say, hey, Dirk, I'm trying to figure this out. And then he goes over here and gets on the computer, and he looks it up in Google, and he does this, that, and another thing, and he comes back with information. And so when you go into court, let me just mention this to you. When you go into court and you're going to argue about income taxes, and you bring up this accepted for value crap and redemption one thing and another, do you know how that case is going to come out? I use the word crap, and I didn't use it accidentally. Do you know how that case is going to come out? I can tell you. You're going to go to jail. It's go straight to jail, don't pass go, and don't collect $200. That's what's going to happen. How do I know that? And does it happen every single time? Probably not. People don't get convicted every single time they break the law. And some people actually get away with it. So when somebody does something and they get away with it, they write a book, and then they sell it for $75 and say, this is the law of the land. It's not only not the law of the land, it's against the law, it's a violation of the law. And then they like to come along and say, well, I learned it at Gordon's. Hell, you didn't learn that here. I didn't teach that. Or I learned it here, there, someplace else, and like as not, that isn't what those guys are teaching either. But, you know, people believe whatever the hell they want to believe, and then they run around telling you what other people believe. And they go around and say, well, Gordon's a cult leader, and he's a religious guy. I'm not very religious, at least I don't think so, and I don't qualify for cult status, and I'm not a cult leader. You don't have to worship me, and you don't have to send me any money, which are a couple of ingredients that go into the cult status program. You gotta revere me, and you've got to send me money. Now, I don't require that, and I don't even accept it, so... You know, don't send me your tithes. A lot of times people, they say, God, I just really like you, Mr. Gordon, and I want to pay my tithe. Tithes only get paid to Levites, and I'm not a Levite. Why in hell would you want to pay your tithe to me when I tell you plainly I'm not a Levite and don't qualify for it? So a lot of times I've sent people's money back. I thank you. I appreciate your confidence in me, and I appreciate your desire, you know, to pay your tithes. But, you know, it's false representation. I'm not a religious leader. I'm not a politician. I'm not seeking your approbation. Not seeking your money. Don't need any of that. Don't even give a damn if you turn the radio off. It's irrelevant to me. You turned the radio on because you wanted some information. I said, okay, well, let me see if I can give you that information that you desire, the information that you're looking for. Now, I'm going to give you some information here on this redemption and straw man. Now, if you'd like to have a more in-depth, direct legal citations and all that go along with it, I put out a CD some years back on this subject matter based upon this lady's book, in which I did a review of it. And when I didn't read all of it. I got to tell you, I didn't read the whole book. I just read selections of it and came to the conclusion that this is the grandest collection of poppycock and insanity that I have ever put my hands on in one place. And who, I think it was Jack Smith that put it out. Now, Jack, you know, nice guy that you are, if you're the guy that put that redemption crap out, I got to tell you that that is the greatest, grandest collection of horse pucky I ever put my hands on. And Larry Beecraft, in his paper here on destroyed arguments that he wrote back here about 10 years ago, made the same observation. And I don't think it's because he's a lawyer and he's real smart, although he is a lawyer and he is real smart. You know, I think Larry Beecraft's a hell of a nice guy, and I've worked with him in the past, and I know him, and he's a great guy and all that. He and I have some disagreements. You know, he says one thing and I say the other, and I don't hold that against him just because he's wrong. I mean, hell, it happens to the best of us. But hell, the moral to the story is that he wrote a story here on the straw man, and then he went to the trouble of proving the negative. And the negative in this is that you got to prove this guy's wrong. Boy, that's tough. It's hard enough to prove that you're right, let alone prove the other guy is wrong. And most people wouldn't take the time, effort, or energy to do that, and I'm one of those. So if you think I'm going to sit here and prove that this is wrong, you're barking up the wrong tree here, partner, because I'm not going to waste my time doing that. But Larry Beecraft did. And he got the information together, and I thought I'd share a little of that with you and tell you the story in case you... whether you're in Australia or New Zealand, hell, this thing's worldwide. This, without a doubt, has got to be the most widespread piece of trash I have ever heard in my life. And I use the word garbage and trash and crap, you know, with intent. I mean, I'm not making a mistake here. So if you're one of those that has been wedded to accepted for value and redemption and straw man and UCC 1-207, redemption and redemption process. And there may be some other words in here, or terms or appellations that should be hung upon this idea, this belief. I think we could call this a cult belief. Then, you know, hang those on it and stick with me, and let me give you the mid-course reminder here, and we'll be back with more on this thing of redemption and the straw man right after this. And we do this so that we can satisfy all of the people around the world and the bureaucratic realm. So bear with me. We just have to do this every program. And remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date on our website for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you would like one, just call and ask for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about redemption and the straw man. Now, if you are a devotee to this concept, you, by this time, are really ticked off. And no doubt you feel sorry for me because I am so ignorant and unable to grasp the truth that is so obvious to you. All right, so let's talk about that for a minute. All of us have a limitation on our ability to learn. Every single one of us, we have a limitation. And I liked Kent Hovind. He had a hell of a neat argument along this line. There was a guy who disagreed with him on a point. And so Hovind asked him, he said, "Sir, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole wide world?" So let me just ask you that question. Sir, madam, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole wild, wide world? You're smarter than Google. I'm not sure that Google has everything that there is to know in the whole wide, wide world on their website. I doubt it. I don't think Google's got everything on there, because last I heard, they were still working, putting more stuff on there, whole libraries. So Google doesn't know everything. So when I ask you, do you know everything there is to know in the world, would you say, yes, I do, or no, I don't think I do? Well, if you've got any sense at all, the answer is no. I don't know everything there is to know in the world. Okay. That's point one. I'd be the first one to tell you that no, little Georgie Gordon doesn't know everything. I'm learning every day. Now, with that out of the way, Hovind asked this question. He said, do you know half of everything there is to know in the whole wide world? One half, 50%. Now, I don't know how much Google knows, but they might know half of everything there is to know in the world. Maybe. I don't know. First of all, I don't know how much there is to know, and so therefore, I'm not in any position to identify where the 50% mark is. So I don't know. Maybe you do. But again, I would suggest to you that if you had any sense at all, you would probably answer the question like I do. No, I don't believe I know one half of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world. I don't know all of it, and I would be very surprised if I knew half of it. So I'm going to be the first guy to come along and say, no, I don't even know half. And then Hovind asked the closing question. He said, well then, sir, could it be that what I have just revealed to you could be in that one half of everything that there is in the world to know that you haven't heard yet? And I thought that was a pretty good line. Wished I'd have thought of it. Then I could have taken credit for it. But I can't. I have to give credit to Mr. Hovind for having come up with that very logical argument. Now, when it comes to this thing of accepted for value and redemption and so on, I've got to tell you, I have looked at it, I have read about it, I have studied it in the literature, done everything I could to identify it, and I can't find jack diddly squat in support of it. That's my problem. So if you have some court cases, I mean, if you can point to the U.S. Supreme Court or the Circuit Court of Appeals here in the United States. Hell, if you could go to your Supreme Court in Australia, New Zealand, China, any damn place, in support of this argument, would you send that to me? Now, please do not inundate me here with reams and reams of emails and pile up on my computer up here and bury us in all this crap, you know, of opinion and Joe talk to Bill, who has a theory that maybe it could well be, and we think, and our belief is, because, you know, no judge, no court anywhere is interested in your opinions and theories and ideas. What they're interested in is, what the hell is the state of the law today? All right, now let me move over here and read a little bit to you from Larry B. Craft's article. Larry B. Craft's in the same boat that I'm in, except that he's smarter than I am, and he actually researched this out and came up with some information that, hell, I probably couldn't have found out. And so I went to Larry B. Craft, and I learned from him, and he told me the answer to the riddle. Let me repeat the answer to the riddle, which comes from the U.S. Supreme Court, which comes from the Circuit Court of Appeals, which comes from the judges, which comes from the literature, which is what every judge is interested in, and which every judge is going to make his decision therefrom. So I tell my students, if you want to be on the winning side, then you want to do what the winners do, and if you want to be on the losing side, you do what the losers do. No, choice is yours. Don't let me get in the way of your choice or your happiness and success. So here's Larry B. Kraft. He starts off by saying there is a new theory floating around the movement, which is absolutely crazy. And I'm using his word, C-R-A-Z-Y. Larry B. Kraft's belief is it's absolutely crazy. I would be more charitable and say that it is probably in error. I don't know if it's crazy or not. It's an idea. And it's an idea that is very, very popular. I mean, this thing is so popular, as I'm telling you, I get more telephone calls on this than anything else. And now I got a guy from Australia explaining it to me. But then when I ask him the questions, you know, kind of getting pointed, you know, it's, well, I don't know. Well, we're thinking about that. Well, here's what we think. Well, you know, if you want to go into court with what you think and stake the next 5 years of your life in prison, you know, on whether or not this is right or wrong, you know, go to it. But I kind of like to have a little bit better odds than that. I kind of like to know, well, what in the hell is the judge going to say when I walk in and tell him this? He says, yet it is promoted as the hot new solution. The new theory has its origins with a fellow named Roger Elvick, who has been involved with some con jobs in the past. See Bai versus Mack, 519 Northwest 2nd 302 in North Dakota, 1994. Roger Elvick was years ago into the idea of sending forms 1099 to the IRS for its agents who stole your constitutional rights. This was a part of his redemption process. Back then, and if you wish to learn about what happened to one party who followed Elvick's advice, then read United States versus Wiley at 979 Fed 2nd 365 from the Fifth Circuit in 1992. So this isn't something that just popped up on the radar screen, see? This has been around for 15 or 20 years. It's been around for a long time. And there are some court cases where judges have actually listened to redemption and straw men, made rulings upon it, and sent people to jail. All right. Now, that does not mean that everybody that believes in redemption or straw man is going to go to jail. I'm not making any claims like that. But in some cases, it could lead to that, like it did with the Montana Freeman some years back. And a number of other people that we're going to report to you right here, that it has happened. Now, many others who followed Elvick's advice also went to jail. See United States versus Dykstra, 991 Fed 2nd 450 on page 453 from the Eighth Circuit in 1994. He, Dykstra, voluntarily made the decision to purchase and use Roger Elvick's redemption program, and he admitted that he did not pay any of the purported recipients any of the amounts reflected on the 1099 forms because he knew he never paid the individuals. He could not have believed that the forms, which he signed under penalties of perjury, were in fact true, accurate, and correct. The evidence also established that the appellant acted corruptly in pursuing the retaliation scheme in violation of 26 U.S.C. section 7212A. Now, I know Roger went to jail, and my recollection is that his incarceration arose from this activity. All right, now, filing fraudulent 1099 forms is not the only form or the only modality or the only activity that goes on with people concerning redemption and the straw man and, you know, UCC 1-207. A lot of it has to do with tax protest. A lot of it has to do with driver's licenses. And, oh, God, there's just a plethora of uses for it. This just happens to be one, right? And so when people call here, they talk about, like this man did yesterday, about their birth certificate and about government bonds and site drafts, and I'm going to tell you some of these stories because I think that they're necessary and imperative to learn from, you know, so that you don't make that mistake. Now, I haven't bought into this program. In fact, I have rejected it. And people will say, "But it works." Well, you're right. It does work. In some cases, this redemption thing, I had a guy in here, I'll just kind of ad-lib a little bit here. I had a guy come in here one time advocating this redemption straw man process over here, and he said that he had done something with his birth certificate. Now, I kind of forget exactly what words he used. I rescinded mine, but he didn't rescind. He did something with it. And he talked about his having this account. And I asked him, I said, well, where is this account? Well, it's with the government. I think it's with the Department of Commerce. And there's this account. How much money is in your account? And he didn't know, but he said it's in the millions. Boys and girls, if I say, how much money is in your account? And you say, I don't know, but it's in the millions, is contradictory on its face, isn't it? Because if you say it's in the millions, then you must know. And if you say, I don't know, then how in the hell do you know it's in the millions? Maybe it's only in the hundreds of thousands. I mean, you might not be as wealthy as you think you are. You might not have millions. You might only have some thousands in there, which isn't too shabby. But again, you know, if you say, I don't know how much is in there, but okay, well, what this really boils down to, he believes this. I don't doubt that. But is it true just because you believe it? Now, I mentioned, you know, that how much do you know? Boys and girls, we only know as much as has come into our minds through our five senses during our lifetimes. That's all we know. And 50% of that is false. 50% of everything that's in your brain right now as I speak is not true. And hell, we've already demonstrated that, and I've reported on Professor Swift's 1918 report a number of times. Hell, you know, we believe a lot of things that simply aren't so. Now, we believe that they're so. You know, that's why Roman Catholics are Catholics. They believe what they believe. Now, on the other side of the coin, there's a Baptist over here. He not only doesn't believe that, he's got evidence and proof that that's not true. And then the Catholic, he's got evidence and proof that what the Protestant believes isn't true. See, and so this is called a controversy. These are the issues that we need to litigate. We're trying to prove which is true, which is false, and that's the tough part of this process. Unlearning the false information that you have is much more difficult than learning the truth to start with. Now, I'm fully familiar with the fact that half of what George Gordon believes is false, but I firmly believe what I believe to be the truth. Otherwise, I wouldn't believe it. Now, would I? So when you write me a letter and you tell me how stupid I am, and what a nutcase and a fruitcake that I am, I take it from the point of view that you, honest to God, believe that. Otherwise, you wouldn't have taken the time to write me the email. But, sir, just because you believe I'm a fruitcake and a cult leader and a tax protester doesn't make that true, no matter how sincerely you believe it. Doesn't necessarily make it true. It may be. Maybe you've got the truth and I'm in error, but, you know, that's the contested issue. I'm denying it, so let's see if we can't prove that. So what I'm suggesting is that if you think that this redemption thing is true, then why don't you go get the court cases and prove it? You know, I'm not asking you to prove it to me. I'm saying give me the evidence. Let me look at the evidence and let me see if I can convince myself that what you're telling me is the truth. Now, I learn something new every day. There's hardly a day goes by now that I can't say to you, well, I'm smarter today than I was yesterday. I didn't know that. Boy, that guy snookered me. That guy did this, that, or something else. And I have experiences that come down the pike nearly every day, and I shake my head and say, where in the hell was I when that brain was passed out? So this guy Roger Elvick came up with this idea back in the early 1990s called redemption. Now, it has been improved upon. This redemption has been improved upon by guys like Jack Smith and others that are out here selling this, and they've got different takes on it, and they've got different uses for it. But now to get back to the guy that I wanted to tell you about over here, I had a student come in here one time. He is a floor layer. He came in here with, there's four of them, came down here from Ohio. And they called up and they wanted, in fact, it was the only four guys in class. And they came down here with the express intention of learning how this redemption thing worked. And they came down, paid their money, came to school, and they went through the process and explained what they were doing. Now, one of the four did this. He bought a brand new Ford Explorer with a site draft that he made on his own computer, drawn upon his straw man account on the, I believe it was, he thought it was, the Commerce Department. As it turned out, it was the Transportation Department. And I was really impressed. He showed me a copy of the site draft that he wrote on his own home computer, drawn on his straw man account. And out in my driveway was his Ford Explorer, and he showed me the title to it. He wanted to prove to me that he had clear title to that car. And he did have, as far as I could tell, clear title to the car. And he wanted to know what's wrong with that. And I was absolutely bedazzled, and I said, wow, that's pretty impressive. And he'd had the car, you know, for about 6 months. So the check actually cleared. I mean, here's a guy goes in, sits down at his computer, writes out a site draft, takes it down to his Ford dealer, buys a new Ford Explorer, and the check cleared. How do you like that? And he said, now, I've got, and he told me how much money he had in his account. It was $6 million. Boys and girls, this guy is a floor layer. I mean, a floor man. Now, you know, he probably makes pretty good money. You know, but let's think about this in pragmatic terms. In order to have $6 million in your account, we presume that somebody somewhere must have earned the $6 million to deposit it somewhere. Didn't he? Now, if you're making $100,000 a year, and you saved every damn penny of that for 40 years, your entire working lifetime, you'd have $4 million, wouldn't you? Every 10 years, you'd have $1 million at $100,000 a year. That's not $6 million. As far as I can tell, people that are tradesmen laying floors don't make $100,000 a year. Now, there might be a guy out there that's doing that, but that's not very routine. I'm an old general contractor, and I ain't paying $100,000 a year for floor layers, carpet layers, and linoleum layers, and so on. So right away, my common sense said, there's something wrong here. I don't know what it is. Here's the title. There's the car. Here's a copy of the site draft that he wrote on his own computer in his own house. Furthermore, he comes in and says, here's a site draft for $236,000 that I wrote and paid off the mortgage on my home. I looked at the site draft. It was a copy of the original. And then he showed me the letter from the bank. And the bank said, we've received your $236,000 balance due on your house. And then he showed me the promissory note had been marked paid in full. He had a promissory note with the bank. And the copy of the deed release, a warranty deed release. I said, wow, that's really impressive. You're living in your home. I said, where did you get the site draft that you made? I made it on my computer, and I drew it on my account. I said, where did this account come from? He said, this is my straw man account. You see, when I was born, my mother and father got me a birth certificate, and the United States of America sold that birth certificate to, and I said, who did they sell it to? He didn't know. But they sold it to somebody. He thinks he sold it to the banking institution somewhere. I said, well, what bank did they sell it to? Where is it recorded? He didn't know. Now, boys and girls, you know, when you've got a letter from the bank that says we've received your $236,000, here's your promissory note, and here's your deed, and here's your Ford Explorer, I got to tell you, that's pretty impressive. I was impressed. And he said, if this isn't true, if this is false, then how come I've got my house free and clear and I've got this car? And I said, I don't know. How in the hell do I know? What do I know? See, I'm one of those guys, I don't know everything that there is to know in the world. But I said to the young man, I said, sir, this sounds like a fraud to me. There's something wrong here. I don't know what's wrong, but I think that if we were to call around a little bit, maybe we could find out. You know, maybe has anybody else been doing this? And yeah, the other three guys had been doing the same thing. One guy was a bus driver with the city of Cleveland. He did the same thing. He paid off a $90,000 mortgage on his house. And he showed me his site draft that he had drawn up on his computer. And he showed me the documentation that the bank had accepted it and paid it off, and everything was copacetic. The third guy was a black fellow who was from Cleveland. One of these guys was white, and the other three guys were black. I don't know if that's necessarily important. And two of them were from Cleveland, and one of them was from Philadelphia. Now, the Philadelphia man was a real estate broker. He was the first man, he said, in 1963, first black man in Pennsylvania to get a real estate broker's license. And I thought, well, that's pretty significant, you know, in the civil rights movement. He had paid off more than $3 million worth of mortgages and debts with his site drafts. And I said, sir, where did you get your site drafts? I mean, these are nice-looking documents. Now, if you presented one of those to me, I wouldn't accept it because I don't deal in commercial paper. I deal in property and deal in gold and silver and wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, and cows, and things like that. I wouldn't take it today. But when I was in the business world, if you had walked into my plant, offered me this document, I would have called your bank. Now, in this case, there is no bank to call. It's called a site draft. And it's drawn on an account of the United States of America. And when I saw that United States of America, I thought, how in the hell does this guy write a check on the United States of America with these? It's got numbers on it, and it's got, you know, names, and it's got information on it. It's a pretty impressive looking document. And I looked at that impressive looking document, and I asked myself, how in the hell do you write this on your computer? Present it to somebody who deposits it in his checking account, and it clears. Huh? We'll talk about that next time when we talk about this thing of redemption, accepted for value, straw man, UCC 1-207, and the redemption process. I think you'll be amazed when we get to the answer next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up, so we'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.